weakest of all political demands is, give me something to vote for.
I'm occupying Wall Street because if you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention.
Of the economy.
I care deeply about what's happening to the country.
People are losing their homes.
I'm unemployed. I'm homeless.
My retirement literally embezzled.
Corporate banking behemoths rob the American people.
That ain't right, man.
Stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we're not going to take it anymore.
This country needs an enema. Well, the world needs an enema.
This is Eve Silber, and you are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. For this Christmas edition, I go on location to Judson Memorial Church. Those of you involved with the movement know just how active and how generous Judson Memorial Church has been for the movement. Donna Scopper, the senior minister there, took time out of her busy holiday schedule to talk with me. I am in Donna Scopper's office here at Judson Memorial Church. Hi, Donna.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Donna, you've been an amazing support to Occupy. Can you tell us when you first heard of the movement, when it first came into your field of vision?
Oh, that's a good question. It feels like it's been there forever. I think it was probably Michael Elek, who is the other minister here at Judson, who came kind of running into the office one day and said, you have got to go to Zuccotti Park. And I said, why do I have to do that? It's way downtown. And he said, no, you have got to go to Zuccotti Park. And we went down there because I always trust what he says. And sure enough, there was a movement of the spirit and of great substance happening right there before my very eyes. And I just kept going down all the time.
What was the first thing you saw when you got there? Do you have a memory of what that was?
I saw the energy. I felt the energy. I could tell. It was one of those beautiful fall days. I thought, oh yeah, this is not going to stop anytime soon.
You are not new to activism. We're going to find out a little more about Judson and its history with activism. But what about your history as an activist? How did that happen? It's not every minister who's as active as you.
Many are. I think I started in college. I was graduating from high school in Martinsburg, West Virginia in 1965, having a full scholarship to go to college. And the school board figured out how to get our high school to lose its accreditation. And when that happened, we hit the streets.
Wow.
With a campaign called SOS, because if we'd lost our accreditation, I couldn't go to college. And there are only about seven of us in the class of, oh, I think it was 700 and some, who were going to college, but we would not be able to go if our high school didn't have its accreditation.
I've never heard of such a thing. How did that
happen?
Oh,
you need to come to places that way back then were so anti-tax that they'd throw their own children under the bus. And it's not like they had a lot of money, so you could understand why they were so anti-tax. So it was also a way to kind of get rid of the school superintendent, you know, one of those local politics things. So that was 65. Then I went to college in the late 60s.
Which means you won that battle.
We won that battle. Oh, yeah.
So you went to college in the late 60s. A lot of our audience knows what that means.
And it was just like, that's what you did then.
Right. Lot of people stopped doing it, but you sustained this level of
activism. I was so lucky to have a college chaplain. I don't think anybody really knows how important college chaplains were to the movements. And this chaplain really supported me. I was in a small liberal arts college, Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. Really good place. I got a great education and got a ton of support from the staff, and particularly from this chaplain, John Van Orsdal, who created a program that, instead of just yelling about civil rights in the street or running down to Washington, he created an exchange program between Gettysburg and Knoxville College in Tennessee, where 10 of us went to be students there for the semester, and 10 people from Knoxville came up to Gettysburg. And it was life-changing. Because it wasn't just talking about racism. or about the positive nature of diversity. It was living it at a crucial developmental time.
Yeah.
So things like that really helped me along.
And is there anything in the Occupy movement that reminds you of other movements, or you can also answer how it differs from other movements that you've been involved with through the decades?
It's very similar. It's got, you know, a ton of idealism. It's got a sense that we're not going to be beat. It's got a sense of moral vigor I don't think it's prideful. I think it's just, man, this is right. People are getting hurt by banks. People are getting hurt by Wall Street. Stop it. It's kind of simple.
What hopes do you have for the Occupy movement? What are you working on with them right now?
I'm working with Occupy Faith, which is a broad-based coalition of congregations, lay people, and clergy.
And I don't mind adding that that was, I think, born out of Judson. Am I right?
Yes, I think
yeah.
It was.
Okay.
Yes. And
what made you guys form that and take that initiative?
Our tremendous respect for what was going on downtown. Yeah. And also our realization that movements are not perfect, and that we didn't want to just join up with something that we weren't sure where it was going. So we just used the word Occupy Faith and became strong supporters and did our own thing inside.
And you've been very active, and your actions are, I always found, were things to learn from.
We had fun with symbols. We created a golden calf.
Tell us about the golden calf, because it's one of my favorite things about Judson. Well, I'm fortunate enough to live in the neighborhood of Judson, so I love bearing witness to what they do.
Let me tell it from kind of the inside.
Okay.
Because I think the story is out there, and the calf is certainly out there. As Occupy was giving birth to itself, there were a lot of hopes, and a lot of people were saying, yeah, I've been wondering about those banks. I've been wondering about economic justice. I've been defending all the social issues as we do here at Judson as much as we can. But the real issue is how afraid people are for their own livelihoods, their own social security, their own pensions, their own wages, their own pink slip, if it might arrive. And so we were thrilled at the economic focus. And I think that's really been Occupy's great gift to us all. So somebody we didn't even know, Roman Catholic man from Maryland, was also experiencing the buildup and the uplift of it. And he was on a retreat, and he said, I don't know what I should be doing, but I think I ought to do something for Occupy. So I'm good with paper mache. I will make a golden calf in the utter likeness of the Wall Street Bull. And same size, same shape, so nobody could miss it. And he did. And he rented a U-Haul truck, and he called us up and said, could you use this calf? And we thought, this is a joke. This is, what are we going to do with this calf? And then we thought, you know, I bet we could use this calf. And so he got somebody to drive it up, and he sat in the back of the truck, finishing painting the gold lame paint on it, and they delivered it down at Houston Street. I don't know why. They were really late for something. And they said, we had to go down and pick it up. So we went down, lovely September evening again, picked the thing up and carried it back up to Judson. And we were just enchanted with it. We said, oh yeah.
It was made to be carried.
It was made for the street. So we carried it up, and you know how it is in the village on a Saturday night, 7 o'clock. Everybody's sitting outside drinking, and people started stopping drinking and say, that's a golden calf in the shape of the Wall Street Bull. And people were cheering it and joining our parade, and we knew we had a hit. Now, as religious people, we were surprised that that many, quote, secular people or street people on the street, didn't have to be secular, recognize the biblical symbolism. We were really surprised.
It's probably from that Charlton Heston movie, maybe?
Yeah, it probably isn't ours. It probably belongs to
somebody
else.
It ended up in
the
common culture somehow.
Yeah, right.
But which makes it even more useful as a prop.
Right.
Because it is familiar to those who watch movies and such.
Yeah.
And I've had a chance to attend, since Occupy began, I started attending your church. This agnostic Jew has had a great time hearing your sermons. You've been really masterful at connecting the issues of this revolution to the liturgy of what is Christianity, not even a modern Christianity, but an authentic theological interpretation.
Or an ancient Christianity.
Ancient Christianity. Getting back to the revolution that it was.
Well, so, you know, Judson is a church in a very progressive Christian tradition. 10% of our members are Jews, agnostic Jews, possibly. Another 20% are people who would call themselves a post-Christian. That Christianity is not everything to them.
Right.
And it certainly isn't to me. I mean, I very much believe in the God beyond God, and Jesus is one representative thereof. So we're always being made fun of for being too secular and too weird, but I actually think we're great, precisely because we're so mixed up about important things, like the divine.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the calf back up to the church, and we said, we're going to put it in for services tomorrow, man. And so we put it right up on basically our stage-altar, and it was gorgeous in our big, big place. And several people who were with us by then said, I don't know the story. What's the story? So we got out our Bibles, and we read the story three times out loud from Exodus 38 about the calf. And we were so moved by it. But how the people had worshipped the wrong thing. They had worshipped gold. And it was so moving. Then the next day, we were having so much fun with the calf, we took it back downtown and down to Zuccotti and had a worship service there. And you remember the sea of people in Zuccotti.
Mm-hmm.
The waters parted. And we brought the calf in and had a great...
Same story, right?
Yeah, it was just amazing. So that's the story of the calf. And we did a number of things like that. We tried to use drama and creative energy to enter the movement and to say, hey, this isn't a little thing. This is a big thing. This goes to the heart of ancient scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're working on the Rolling Jubilee,
yeah,
with Strike Debt. And I don't know if your listeners know, it's so funny that the heart of the Christmas story, it begins in Luke 2 with, and all the world went to be taxed when Cyrenius was governor. And people think that there's such a radical divide between the spiritual and the material, and there isn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
The way we use money is very much our access to what is holy. Our access to what is holy can be found in our date book and our checkbook,
right,
and what we value. So the Rolling Jubilee really goes back to a very biblical concept, which is that the Jews believed that they were to forgive debt every 7 years to level the playing field. Because there would always be people who would make money off of others unjustly. And that then 7 times 7, every 49th year, everything would be flattened. So the land would be allowed to rest on the 7th year. People's debts would be forgiven. And so when Jesus, the very first thing Jesus says about himself that is recorded, he says, this is the year of the Jubilee. Identifying himself with this economic and spiritual, the simultaneous economic and spiritual practice. So, and he says, I proclaim the year of the Lord. And so he's really, let's not get into the fight about the Messiah. That's way too difficult. People saw him identifying with the Jubilee. and bringing in new freedom. So the prayer that Jews and Christians all say, forgive us our debts as we forgive the debts of others, is right there saying, yeah. Hello, let's be fair about this.
And is there a history of the Jubilee actually being practiced? I know it's written
absolutely.
In the Bible.
It's less practiced than it was hoped for.
But by the time Jesus was born, it had been a forgotten element, or?
No, there people were still practicing it. It never, you know, the bankers are always pretty mean. So the actual practice of it, as an agrarian practice, the land would rest, but not everybody's debts would be forgiven. What we know is that it wasn't fully practiced, that it was hoped for.
And does he speak more of it as in mm-hmm. the Bible? What else does he say?
Well, he said, when somebody says, so how often should you forgive your neighbor who sinned against you? And he says, how about 7 times 7? Which means infinitely. So again, it's a spiritual hope for an economic practice, or a spiritual picture of an economic practice that would be more just than one generation. You know, you get rich and then you stay rich.
Right, and 49 years is kind of a generation.
Yeah, or you get poor and you stay poor.
You are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. This is WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm your host, Eve Silber, and I'm talking with Donna Scopper on this very special Christmas edition of Occupy Wall Street Radio. She has been with the Occupy movement in many, many different ways. And we're talking just about the current event of the Jubilee. Is there any connection to it with the Christmas story? I guess a sense of redemption, which is an element of the Christmas story. And
the connection, I believe, with the Christmas story is that, again, the spiritual and the material are considered together. So when we get fancy about what Christmas means, we have a big word for it, which is the incarnation. And incarnation, if you heard the Spanish, you'd get it. Encarnacion, it means in the meat or in the flesh. And so what we find is Jesus, God is said to come down from heaven to earth, and the Word becomes flesh and dwells among us. So it is, again, fancy theologians say that there's one kind of God, which is the transcendent God, way out there. And then there's also an immanent God, the God inside you, the kind of the light Quakers talk about. So we say that God is both transcendent and immanent. And the big creator God, basically, the way our story goes at Christmas, just got fed up with humanity ignoring what was good and just and right, and said, okay, I'm going to send my own son to the earth and straighten things out. So heaven comes to earth. If you know Christmas carols, you'll hear mm-hmm. this. Joy of heaven to earth come down. Hark the herald angels sing. So heaven comes down to earth. Eternity enters time. Spirit enters flesh. There are all these groovy things happening in Jesus, who we understand to be the ideal human. And what was different about Jesus? He only paid attention to God. He didn't do what most of the rest of us do, which is to pay attention to each other, or who's thinking what, or how do I get money to make myself look good. He only paid attention to the one he called Abba, or Father. And it's a very beautiful thing to be a human, to be fully human, to be ideally human, as in self-forgetful and other-directed. So Jesus came, and the story of the birth, of course, is so remarkable because it's a humble birth. It's just, it's like it couldn't make more of what a humble guy this is. So I always like to think that the Christmas story is God yanking our chains about divinity. Because didn't you think that the world would be saved by a king? You know, or by Obama, or by some big leader? The idea that the world would be saved by an ideal human, or a human at his full potential, as a self-forgetful human who's not all uptight about himself, but is actually dedicated to the universe, if you don't like the word God.
Right.
So here Jesus comes, born in this remarkable virgin birth, which is clearly an addition to the story, because all the heroes then were said to have been born of a virgin birth. It was just a literary trope, basically.
What other indications are that Julius
Caesar,
I see,
was born of a virgin? You know, it's something you say later. So I think the virginity of Mary has nothing to do with how interesting the story is. And it becomes a sidetrack. So he comes from these peasants, Mary and Joseph. He's born, doesn't even have a house to live in, so he's born in a stable with animals.
And there's no room for them, says the world around them.
There's no room for this kind of ideal human, unless they can pay, and of course they can't pay. And then the shepherds get involved. They're clearly working people. I mean, sometimes I think that God was crazy to trust such an enormous message with such foolish people. But that's what God did, to make this point, I think, about how, forget about kings saving you. You have to save each other. And you humans can do it. Which is what I adore about Occupy Sandy. I adore Occupy Sandy. Saying, let's get rid of the charity thing.
It's mutual aid.
Mutual aid. I think that really is the message that God was making in Jesus.
And we who spent time in Zuccotti saw the foreshadowing of Occupy Sandy in the mutual aid that was integral to survival in that park.
Exactly.
It was based on mutual aid.
Couldn't have been more beautiful.
Shortly after the occupation began, I noticed there's quotes that stay up a long time on the front of Judson Church.
Mm-hmm.
Those quotes, I might add, are accompanied with statistics about the death of Iraqi citizens, the death of soldiers, etc. And it's one of the things that just visibly marks this church as being obviously different from other institutions we pass every day. You had a quote, I remember, that I found out after I read it a bunch of times, clearly was from you, which is not the usual thing.
Right.
You talked about the Occupy movement as lifting us out of a spiritual and political depression.
Mm-hmm.
The link of the spiritual and the political is something you're not afraid of.
No.
You want to speak on that quote a little bit? Because I was very moved by that.
Oh, that's cool. I realized that I had been in, you know, I've been in ministry for 39 years, 65 years old. I had become spiritually depressed during the Bush years. I mean, frankly, this whole first decade of the 21st century just stinks. It's been one stupid thing after another, and if anything, it's accelerating.
It's not, especially because we anticipated evolution by these numbers, 20, whatever.
Yeah.
We imagined a different outcome of time passing.
Right. And, you know, beginning with 9/11, and our response, I always say, of course it was terrible what happened there. Of course it should never have happened. And even I would applaud President Bush's one part of his response, which was, to make sure that we know that not all Muslims shoot people up or knock over buildings. Okay, Mazel
mm-hmm.
Tov. Good.
Good.
But our response to 9/11 has been ridiculous. It's broken the bank. It's cost so much money. And I hope I'm not being rude in not mentioning first the number of lives over and over and over, just wasted on a war that never made any sense, or just kind of just reaching out, let's just shoot them up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have some Al-Qaeda, that's who it was, in there, so let's just shoot them all up. Women and children and civilians and money. It's been ridiculous, and I can only talk about it from the point of view of a frequent airline traveler.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what I see happening is that we are rehearsing. When anybody in a uniform tells me to do anything, my American sensibilities go nuts. So I really don't like what's happened in Iraq or Afghanistan, but I really don't like that the American public has bowed down and just done aye-aye captain to a bunch of people in uniform, say, take off your belt, take off your shoes. It's practice for a kind of tyranny. And
you and I have talked a lot about the tyranny that the Occupy movement endures when it tries to peacefully assemble.
Exactly. Over and over. Overreaction. And the Department of Homeland Insecurity has done these wars. It's done the airport junk. It's created hatred towards immigrants. It made Manhattan look ridiculous last year when we couldn't have Park 51 downtown. Judson Church was founded as a community center.
Right.
We couldn't sit that one out. And it was just the American people at our worst are a bunch of phony collaborators. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. It's ridiculous. At our best, we fight that.
So when you saw the Occupy movement, you recognized a comrade and its spirit. And
yes,
it's what it's setting out to do.
Absolutely.
And it was just an obvious choice for you to engage yourself in this movement.
It got me through my political depression. I called it my Xanax. It allowed me to look at the Statue of Liberty without being ashamed. It made me very patriotic and very proud. So I'm in.
We're so glad you're in. Donna Scopper, Senior Minister of Judson Memorial Church, services every Sunday at 11 a.m., just an hour from 11 to 12. And as they say at the end of the service, as you say, now the service begins.
Amen.
This has been Occupy Wall Street Radio. I want to thank our engineer, Michael G. Haskins, our technical producer, Reggie Johnson. The email address for this show is OccupyWallStreetRadio@gmail.com. You can listen to these shows on the archives at WBAI.org. Be well, folks. Have a good one.
Mary grows a child without the help of a man. Joseph gets upset because he doesn't.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
I took a pounding from the radio today. I heard the radio say that over and over, and there was no escape.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Iggy Pop.